This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
You are listening to Red Ice Radio, and I'm Henrik. Thank you for spending some of your time with us today. You can follow us worldwide on a regular basis at RedIceCreations.com. Johan Oldenkamp is an all-round scientific researcher based in the Netherlands. He is the author of 25 books. The main title of his latest book is Holy Science, and this is what we're going to detail in today's program. Johan will explain how science and religion do not offer genuine insights into the nature of our reality, only descriptions of all phenomena. The reasons that both the universities and the churches offer misguidance is the artificial division between physics and metaphysics. Welcome to Red Ice Radio, Johan. Thank you for talking with us today. It's great to have you with us. I've been familiar or known about your work for some time now, and we've talked with some of your peers, of course, as well. So thank you for coming on. Good to talk to you.
I'm very happy to be on the show, so thank you for inviting me.
You bet. You have a lot of material, a lot of interesting stuff that we want to get into today and talk more about. Much of this can be found, of course, on your website, pateo.nl. You have tons of videos and everything, but let's kind of back up and take things from the start. And I don't know if the overarching name for what we're doing here, what you're talking about, is the holy science. And this is not H-O-L-Y, holy in that way. It's actually holy, like W-H-O-L-L-Y. So tell us the use of that word and what holy science means, Johan.
Yeah, to me, holy with the W and the double L has the same meaning as without. It's referring to the whole of everything. And we've been presented by our educational system and by the churches and the governments, not the whole story, but just a very limited part. And maybe that part is also turned upside down. Maybe we'll go into that later on. But if you understand the whole of everything, that's a kind of holy science. That whole also includes the creator. And so you touch the subject of sacred and holiness. And to me, holy is just referring to the whole of everything, just like healing is. Healing is also referring to the whole. So that's what holy science is to me. And I prefer to write it with a W and a double L to bring it out of the world of spirituality. Of course, it's related to that, but it's not something that is untouchable or unknown. We can fully understand everything because the principles are very logical and easy to understand if you have an open mind.
Indeed. So what we're talking about here is a holistic approach of looking at everything as opposed to what science is currently doing, which is just looking at the parts. And very few people are actually in the process of bringing these various parts together. I guess some are, but as we know, Johan, many of these subjects are compartmentalized. And when we just study the parts, we lose the big picture of what things really are about.
Yes, exactly. Everything is based in our current society on divide and conquer. A professor hardly has any basic understanding of other fields of subject. So instead of divide and conquer, what I like to do is to connect and liberate. And that's in fact what also the purpose of holy science is. By connecting all the different parts of the puzzle and seeing the bigger picture, we can start to figure out what is in fact the meaning of life and what is the reason why we human beings are on this planet. What's the sense of all of this? And once we understand that, then we can understand also to do a better job than we do at this moment, because I don't think we're doing a really great job at the moment on this planet.
I tend to agree with that, definitely. Now, when did you get interested in these subjects? What's your background, are you on?
When I was a student at the university, I studied psychology. I bought a lot of secondhand books about esoteric and occult subjects, and those books were much more interesting to me than the university books I had to read to get good grades. And since then, I've always been interested in the other world, so to say. It never let me loose, but it was for me difficult to have it combined, because I had to also had a career. I had to make a lot of money and things like that. But at a certain moment, I decided to quit my job as a professor. I even sold my own house and I stopped my own company to focus myself fully on understanding that kind of knowledge and to make it available to other people. So, but the interest has been there since I was young, but it took a lot of years before I finally was brave enough to quit the old society and step in step towards the new one.
Indeed. Now, let's talk about what pieces of the puzzle that you consider has been held, let's say, by the church, first of all, and then we can talk about the science as well, scientific field, because, again, what you're doing here is bringing these together. It's about spirituality in a sense, but it's also about this is the scientific field. And if we go back far enough in time, that's what it used to be. But there was this split happened at one point here when, I think, primarily when the church moved in and they kind of gained their hand on some of this knowledge. Some of it has been suppressed, and now some of that is coming back now with the scientific field, of just as a consequence of basically investigating everything. So these fields is kind of slowly coming back, I would say. But what part of the puzzle has been held by the church and the scientific field?
Maybe you're familiar with the work of Plato, and especially the allegory of the cave, where he describes that our reality is are mere shadows on a wall, and not real by themselves. They are a reflection of something else. And in that allegory, I see three different worlds. The outer world is the shadow world, and that is what the university study only. The inner world, the middle world, I call the proto world, because proto means in front of. It's in front of the shadow world. And the origin of everything, that's the fire in the allegory of Plato, in the cave. The fire projects the shadows through objects that are in front of the after the fire. I mean, so the source world is in fact the world of God or the Creator or anything you like to call it, and yeah, those worlds have been divided. So you could say the churches were able to talk about the source worlds in relation to the proto world, but were not allowed to talk about the shadow world. And the universities were not allowed to talk about the other worlds. So there was a split between the worlds. And then, yeah, we get half of the story on one side and the other half of the story on the other side. And they were not connected anymore. So what I mostly tell in my story is, if you have spirituality without a solid ground of science, then it's fantasy. It's not real. But if you have only the solid ground without higher purpose, then, yeah, it's soulless. It has no beating heart, so to say.
Yeah.
And that's true for the universities. What they tell us there are soulless theories. They are dead. So what we need to do is to bring those worlds back together from religion and universities, from all the ancient scriptures to the modern findings of universities, and see that they're all interrelated, because it's all about the same worlds if we take the bigger picture.
Now, on your book, Holy Science, the blurb there, it says the following: science without spirituality is dead and without soul, just as you said. And the universities offer us nothing but dead and soulless theories. Spirituality without science is fantasy and ungrounded. The church offers us nothing but ungrounded fairy tales. And then it goes on to say, holy science shows that grounded spirituality is the beating heart of a living science. Holy science enables us to understand the process of creation. By mastering creation, humanity will rise up to a level of God. That final step in the development of human consciousness is called the apotheosis. Tell us about this more, John.
Yeah, most people have some kind of scared association with apotheosis, because they think it's the same like Armageddon and ending of the world. But it literally means stepping up to the level of God or the gods. You can also use the plural. And that's in fact what we're doing now. We have been in the dark for long. We have been kept in the dark, I have to say, because the powers that be or that were perhaps were not really eager to share the basic information and the basic insights of this bigger picture to the broad community. But now, through internet and to many people who are somehow awakened themselves, all this information is coming out, and more people are starting to see the bigger picture. So it's no longer possible to prevent us from seeing that. which I think is really great. And that is also, according to my interpretation of the Mayan calendar, what exactly is the meaning of the current period we're living in. We step up to that highest level, and then we understand that we indeed are also a kind of God, because we create our own reality with our energies, with our thoughts, with our emotions. We project energies around us, and those energies attract other energies. And by doing so, we create our own reality. And most people are not aware of that. So that's really interesting, because once you understand that you create your own reality and everything that happens inside of that reality, then you can no longer blame other people for things that occur in your life, because you cannot play victim any longer, because you created it yourself, probably unaware, unconscious. But that's the whole picture. So once we understand that, and that spirituality is in fact making contact to the creational force that is inside every one of us, and by doing so we also create to the supreme creator, so to say, then we understand that in fact there cannot be a division between spirituality and science, because it's there are two sides of the same coin.
Indeed. Now, stepping up to the level of God, that's something that many Christians have feared and talked negatively about for many years, that we are not, mankind is apparently not meant to advance any further, although even Jesus himself said, you know, what I can do, you can do as well, and you can do it even better, right? So what's this, where's this stigma and fear come from, do you think, that we should advance up to a certain degree, but not after that point, because then we're, challenging God or something like that?
Yeah, if you want to control other people, then you should not encourage them to raise their consciousness to a high level. So you somehow make them believe that they are not worthy, or they are not important enough, or they are not able to. And that has been done long by the churches. So it's a very good recipe to create control and obedient masses. But I think the opposite is in fact the truth. We can raise ourselves to the highest level, and that's what's happening at this moment, I think. By that we understand truly what God is, because I think God is within each and every one of us. We are a spark. We have a kind of divine spark in us, and that is the same divinity as God with a capital G. So we are in fact all gods, or son of gods, or whatever you like to refer to that. And that's not blasphemy or anything like that. It's just recognition of true understanding of the process of creation. That, to me, that is key. If you understand the process of creation, then you understand how everything has been created in this reality. And by understanding that, you understand that you can also use the same recipe to create. So then there is no difference between the supreme creator and you as a incarnated creator, or anything you like to refer to that. So we are indeed divine creatures, because we can create our own reality.
What is the process of creation? How can we explain that, and how can we get help to understand what it is?
For the process of creation, I'm really happy to work with the 13 tones of the Mayan calendar. Most people are familiar with that, for instance, for the Tzolk'in, that's a most popular calendar from the Mayans. That means literally counting of the natural days. And those 13 tones, they can be compared to the tones of a musical scale. In the musical scale, we see the first do, and then it goes up to do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, and then the second do. And the second do vibrates twice as fast as the first one. So it's an increase of frequency or vibration with a factor of two. And there are, when you look at a piano, for instance, you see eight white tones, white keys, I have to say, and those white keys represent the whole tones. And in between you see first two, and then three, and then two, and three. But it's a pair of five semitones in between. And eight whole tones and five semitones together make 13 tones. And those are exactly the same tones as the tones of the Mayan calendar. So it's directly related to music. Most people are not aware of that, but it's not only in naming, but also in meaning, they are fully similar. And you can also go to the Enneagram, because in the Enneagram you see again those seven tones, but now the Do is at the top. So you see Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Si, Do, and then you come back all the way to the position of the nine at the top of the Enneagram. And in between you find that the position of three and six, there are no tones. Those are called intervals. And the theory says that if you want to go all the way up to the next Do, you need to have two shocks, one at the three position and the other one starts at the sixth position. But in fact, does it work just before the nine? But that's, we'll go a little bit too far. But those are two very powerful methods. What I mostly do in my work, I give, for instance, a whole week of training in France in a beautiful chateau. And first I talk about the own tones of each person, because the day you were born, one tone is dominating that day. So you, then you know your own tone. And you can do the same with the Enneagram. You can see what type you are. Based on a method I use for typing people. So then you understand the energy, and when there is a group, then you see the different energies available in the group. So you can see what energy does to a person and how it is manifested. And yeah, when you have that kind of background, then it's more easy to understand how you can use those 13 steps to start with something you want to create. That's the first one. You give the intention, where you make very specific what is the purpose and the outcome you desire for the process of creation. And then you use each step according to the energies that are available, the forces that are available there or required. And then you end up at 13, where you, when you enjoy the the reaching the goal and obtaining what you've intended to create. So maybe it's a little bit abstract. It's hard for the radio. Mostly when I give presentation, I have all kinds of charts with me, and I can point it out. But I hope that the listeners get some kind of idea how it works.
Sure. And I mean, we've talked about this in various different settings. I mean, are you deriving any of this from the work of, let's say, Kalman here from Sweden, who works also with the step pyramid as a kind of a visual representation of the steps, those 13 steps for creation?
Yes. Carl Johan Kalman was a big source of inspiration to me, and also the people from mayanmagics.com, I think,
sure,
is the website.
Ian Lungold,
Ian Lungold, for instance. I was really flabbergasted with his lecture. And I dove into it. And what I really like about the work of Kalman is that he shows that those nine levels of that step pyramid in Chichen Itza is in fact related to consciousness. And he maps it very precisely to the evolvement of consciousness on this planet related to the different species that were living here. For instance, the dinosaurs fit beautiful in there, and also the mammals and the primates. So it makes a lot of sense, that rhythm. And I integrated that with my own work, because I've done a lot of research as well, and I build on that. But I differ a little bit with Carl Kalman about the end date. We also had email contact about it. Mm-hmm. To him, it was October 28 of 2011. And according to my interpretation, it was July 14th of this year. But we both agree that it has to be on a ending day of the Tolkien. So it means that it has to be a 13 tone and the seal of Ahau, of sunlight. And that differs a lot from the December 21 prophecies, so to say. So we were nearly on the same page, so to say. But I really admire his work, and he's also on the Pateo Academia on my website. So I work a little bit together with him.
Right. So what do you? How do you view the 2012 thing here then? And is there any significance to that? If we go back and, for example, look at some of the things that Ian Lungold brought out, there are obviously tremendous expectations, if you will, for some of the changes that were to happen there, and I can't agree that they've all come true at this stage now, when we're less than about a month away actually from that 2012 end date. I know that Ian also incorporated the 2011 date from Kalman, of course, but mm-hmm. It seems that it's not working according to that plan 100%, correct?
No, I had a very big spiritual kind of revelation, so to say, on July 15th, so exactly the day I projected, but it was maybe because I was expecting things, or maybe I created it myself. I thought it would also mean that a lot of systems would collapse by now, for instance, the financial system and the control system and the way media is presenting things to us, the controlled media, of course. But it's not happening as fast as I expected it to be. So I'm not sure if it is an outer change or an inner change. I think now more that it's a window of opportunity for people to make a kind of inner development, to grow until the highest level possible, to reach your own divinity, so to say. And by doing so, then more and more people will be able to create a world that is according to that kind of consciousness. But it will take a little bit more time than I have expected. For a long time, I thought that people who were not able to reach that higher level would somehow vanish from this planet and become sick or whatever, or get depressed. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see that it's just still going on, the same old world.
It is. It's interesting. When we talked with Kalaman and some of the other people around us too, to a certain extent, it is happening, right? Kalaman talked about the financial trouble for a long time, back in 2005, really, and this really began to fully unfold in 2008 or something like that, and still ongoing. And I kind of try to argue a little bit that there seems to be, and it doesn't mean that everything that he talked about in there is going to actually come true or whatever, but there seems to be a delay in the implementation of these energies that are incoming. There seems to be something with the fact that we're talking about something that's coming from a spiritual source, but it's actually going to come in and manifest itself into a very thick, heavy material realm, if you will, and hence there might simply be a delay in this. It might still be that some of these changes are actually ongoing, occurring, but it still might be actually X amounts of years away before this fully has blossomed, if you know what I mean, Johan.
Yeah, I fully understand what you mean, but I'm not really eager to give that as an answer, because people would think that I'm a bad loser. But I also think that somebody's messing with the clock. The game should have been over by now, but somebody has changed it a little bit, so the time is not going as fast as it should. We'll see. It's very clear to most people that that there are big changes going on. The old way of doing is collapsing. Old ways of business are going are stopping. People get out of business, go bankrupt. People who used to have a lot of control over their own lives or over other people are now starting to become a little bit more in panic, because control is no longer the way things are done on this planet. When you want more control, you get more trouble. That's the basic.
Yeah.
So it's, instead of control, we have to find something else to make the world go around, so to say. And that is co-creation. And that's based on being open and honest about your intentions and why you want to do it. No hidden agendas. And that's totally new, because and it's also not it's not for your own good. It's okay if it's good for you, but that should not be the start of it. It should be the start of the common good for making it better for more people and more animals and plants. And control is going away, and we get a new mechanism that enables us to do things. And that's what we see now. All the control systems are collapsing, but it's very gradual. It's not a really a drastic collapse,
yeah,
as I expected, but it's going in a natural, very soft way, so to say.
Exactly. I don't think that would have been such a smart way. If there's an intention behind this creation, and if there is a natural deconstructive force behind them taking away things that are unethical, shall we say, that doesn't hold these pure intentions behind them, and they're about subjugating and controlling other people, as you say, then I still think it would not be a good idea to eliminate these overnight, because the ramification of that would be catastrophe, because still a lot of people are dependent on these systems that we have in place. So I think one thing falling over and another one naturally, you know, coming into its place and taking over that has a good intention instead is actually a better idea. I don't know. Some people might think, oh, well, that's kind of boring. I want to see things blow up, you know, that kind of attitude towards this. But I think it's actually a good thing at the end of the day. What do you think?
I fully agree, but it took me maybe 2 years to understand it like that, because I was so fed up with the old system, and I was so personally damaged by it that there was some kind of urge for revenge in me. So let's settle the score. But that's not in harmony with things, because the age we're going to, the kind of life we're heading for, that is not based on those very primitive emotions. It's more based on harmony and balance and giving everybody enough time to reach there. So I think the designer of this process, is very wise and very full of love to do it like this. So everybody now gets a chance everybody gets a wake-up call. And if the wake-up call is not really helping, then, a few weeks later or maybe a month later, there will be another wake-up call. So everybody gets enough space to do it in his own way, to make yourself loose from the old system and try to see what the new system can do for you, and see how you can transfer yourself, your own lifestyle, from old to new. So I think it's beautiful the way it's working out now.
So assuming that this is how things work, what is driving all of this, and why is it happening now at this time, basically?
Whoops, that's a tough question.
I know. Sorry about that.
To me, the Mayan calendar was really, how do you say it, was giving me a lot of backup for my understanding, because this has to make sense. We also talk about the age of Pisces that is now transferring into the age of Aquarius, but that happens every 26,000 years. So that is not that big according to the interpretation of Carl Kalman of the Mayan calendar, because that's according to that interpretation, this is a very unique moment, because it's the end of the nine levels, and that is the first time it happens in this reality. So that's extremely unique. So I'm not sure how to integrate those two, but I think that there are much more civilizations in this universe, and we are not really advanced at all. So I think we now have a time to graduate and to show that we indeed belong to a bigger universe, that we can enter high school, so to say. Mm-hmm. And think that's the reason why it's happening now. I think a lot of people have incarnated in this life because they they play a major role in helping humanity to step up to that highest level. And that's why we have so many interesting, so many inspired people on this planet.
Really good. Now, is this, you mentioned before that this is an opportunity window here. Does that mean to you that it's at some point going to close as well?
Yeah, to me, I thought it would close at July 15. But I feel that it's still open. And to be honest, I thought I was at the highest level at that day, and I experienced really something marvelous. But then I drop back again, and I step up once. So it's a kind of wave where I go up and down with my own consciousness. And maybe it's even higher than I can even be higher than I was on that specific day. So I think the window is still open, and it might be open for a while. To give everybody a chance to make that transition to a new way of living. So I don't think it will end very soon, and I don't think there will be any catastrophe waiting us on December 21 or after that. Of course, our mother planet Terra is also changing, or Gaia, but that doesn't mean that we will be kicked out of this planet, that we will like fleas from a mammal.
Right.
I don't think that will happen. I think we are connected deeply with our mother, and she's taking care of us. But she's also going through a transformation, just like we are doing too.
Interesting. Now, Is, in your opinion, evolution, either as far as it's officially defined or if you would like to redefine that, is a evolution part of this process forward, advancement, if you will, at all?
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it's a mix of evolution and creation. A kind of energy wave is hitting us at a certain at fixed moments, and that somehow pushes evolution into a certain direction, and then the natural evolution is taking place, and then it gets another boost from outside. So it's a dynamic interaction between the natural process of creation from inside out, combined with an from outside in. Yeah, kind of push, a kind of injection with special energies. I think it's something like that.
Let's talk. I saw one of your video presentations there. You talked a little bit about basically the ongoing mirroring and the dialectic, if you will, that we're living in with light and dark, night and day, the measurements of times, yin yang, and also that there's a negative and positive mirroring going on between these different elements. Can you break this down a little bit for us?
Yeah, of course. I talked about the cave of Plato. To me, the fire in that cave, that is the divine creating force, so to say, and that can be brought back to energy to information. But I'll let that go. I mostly talk about the source code. So in essence, everything is just a code. But the middle worlds, the objects that create the shadows. Those are the forces, and we have two primary forces, and those can be called yin and yang, and they are very familiar, but most people have not really an idea what it means, because they talk about yin and yang in the shadow world, but those are the shadows created from the interaction between yin and yang. So everything in the source is still fully in balance, but the moment it enters the second world, the proto world as I call it, then there is a division between yin and yang. And in a way for us to understand it, that's the division between electricity and magnetism. All big, the major force, let me say like this, the major force in the universe to understand everything is not gravity, as the university still think, but it is electricity. And electricity is creating everything. And when there is electricity, there's also magnetism, because those two interact with each other. Electricity creates magnetism, and magnetism creates electricity. And those are yin and yang. And electricity causes objects to heat, while magnetism causes them to cool. And they keep themselves into a kind of beautiful balance. And that's also the work of Walter Russell. He writes a lot about this,
yeah.
And he shows that there's a beautiful dynamics. And yeah, his ideas were used by the people behind the electric universe theory, but they divided a little bit from the work from Russell. But in essence, it's fully correct, of course. It's about the electric force that is creating everything, and that's causing all the phenomena we know. And things like black holes are just created because we think that gravity is the main force, but that's not true. So if we can let go of the idea that gravity is the principal force, but and replace it with electricity, then we can get rid of a lot of concepts from science. I don't call that science, but I call it science fiction, because they're all fictionous theories and fictionous particles and fictional phenomena, which are not really necessary to have when you understand that electricity is the main force. So that's the dynamics between yin and yang. And then you get from those two primary forces, you go into four secondary forces. And I've already mentioned those four. Those are earth, air, water, and fire. And earth and water are the two yin forces, the two female forces. And air and fire are the two male forces. And and then you can bring those four forces back to the types of energy we have, for instance, because earth represents kinetic energy, air represents chemical energy, water is magnetic energy, and fire is electric energy. But you can also connect these four to the forces. Physics says there are four basic forces. Well, those are just shadows of these four I just mentioned. For instance, gravity of the gravitational force is a shadow of Earth, while the electromagnetic force is a shadow of air. The strong nuclear force is a shadow of water, while the weak nuclear force is a shadow of fire. And I can give more and more examples of this, but you can bring all those things back to those four forces. Also, the four types we find in our DNA, cytosine, guanine, thymine, and adenine. Mm-hmm. They also represent one-on-one with these four. Or the major atoms we find in all living forms of matter are carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and hydrogen. And those four also match one-on-one on the four secondary forces I just mentioned. Mm. So if you understand what earth, air, water, and fire means, to make a long story not too long,
yeah.
Then you can understand all the phenomena in the shadow world, but because they always can be related back to these four energies or forces.
Tell us a little bit more about the shadow world and how much you know about what things stem from there. I guess we're always trying to get to the mystery of creation and what's driving things and kind of what the origins of things are, because if this is just an effect of something that we're seeing, then we're not really living in that I don't know if we should call it the true world, but this is like a reflection of that, right?
Yeah, Walter Russell says it very beautiful. He says this world we live in is based on our five senses. And we need to understand first how those five senses actually work. For instance, when you look at something, then you think you see what you see, but in our mind, everything is switched upside down. So when you, for instance, look at a closet in front of you or whatever, then in fact, the closet is upside down. I don't want to confuse you, but that's in fact what it is.
It's the optical nerve that turns it the right way. Again,
so, yeah,
or the brain.
in our brain is reversed again, but what we actually see is upside down. But our brain puts it back onto the way it is in front of us. It's just a short example.
Yeah.
But what I want to get to is that our senses they get some kind of stimulation from outside, and that stimulation can be is mostly a physical stimulation. It can also be electric, but let not make it too complicated. And that means just basic signals, and those signals are interpreted by our senses, and then they are coded, and then they are transferred to our brain, and our brain is making something out of that. And that means that we indeed create our own reality. There's a very famous video on the internet where you are asked to count how many times a basketball is being passed over. And when you focus on the basketball in your accounting, then you not see what happens, because in the end you get the question, did you see the monkey? Probably you've seen it,
sure.
But it's very, very, I should not tell it in advance.
It's lovely.
But it's amazing that you the first time were actually not seeing something really important. And in my study of psychology, I saw many more examples where your senses can be easily fooled.
Yeah.
So,
like there's a monkey on the basketball field, but you're focusing on the ball so much that you didn't even see that. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's very incredible because you don't believe it, and then you see it, and then you cannot understand that you didn't see it. So our sense is not really reliable. And yeah, of course, the police knows a lot about it because they interview witnesses, but they know that whatever they bring up is not really reliable at all. But we do base our the universities, all the theories we have are based on those five senses.
Exactly,
So that's a little bit tricky.
So empirical, sorry to interrupt, John, but empirical science, meaning what we see and observe, is not any guarantee for it really happening then?
Maybe they happen, but we don't have we don't see the whole picture. We only see the effects of it and how they influence our senses and what we create of that. But the biggest problem with the universities at this moment is that they don't offer real explanations. They just give mere descriptions, and they use fancy formulas, mathematic formulas to impress us. But to me, it's just like Hans Christian Andersen says in his fairy tale, it's the emperor who has no clothes on.
Yeah.
But when you are impressed with the non-existing clothes of all the formulas, then you don't see it. But if you are a child and you see, whoa, the emperor is butt naked, then you start to understand that it's not really an explanation. It's just a description. Just like the gravitational force is not really an explanation at all. It's just describing that a smaller object is attracted towards a bigger object. That's in fact what the theory says.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help us really much further.
That's right. So, it's an effect of something, and whatever that is, we don't know at this stage.
No, and that's why we need to go into the proto world where the forces are interacting. That's why I'm also very fascinated by the Mayan calendar, by the I Ching, and by the Nine Star Key, and by all the ancient stuff from the East and the West, and from South America, Middle America, and India and China and so on. Because those scriptures are not about the shadow world. Those scriptures are about the dynamics in the world in front, on the other side of the veil, so to say. And when we understand the dynamics on the other side of the veil, then we can also get a better idea of why the dynamics is here in this world. So if we need to understand the shadows and when we want to explain them, then we need to get across the veil. So we have to enter the proto world. And we can do that with our own thinking and our own feeling, because we are also on the other side of the veil when we are in our minds. Our mind is not in this world. Our mind is on the other side of the veil, but we think that we are on this side because we fully rely on our senses.
Yeah.
And all the ancient cultures also use all kinds of stimuli for the brain to detach itself from the physical world and enter another world. And that's why the governments are so trying to suppress all that, because then we enter another world. That in fact we are much more than we think we are. I'm not promoting to use drugs or anything. I'm not using anything myself, not even alcohol. But I know that by stimulating, for instance, the pineal gland, we make contact with another world, and that world is more real, much more real than this shadow world, because this is only, yeah. The effects of that's primary world.
Well, that's a good point, and there's many different ways of doing that as well. Everything from binaural beats to ketamine, like we talked with another guest the other day about that. Then we have the natural release of DMT. You don't have to go and take government lab created lysergic acid to get there. If you know what I mean, Johan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. DMT is a very powerful substance, and it's pure organic. It's a natural substance, and that directly influences our pineal gland. If you, for instance, see maybe the work of David Wilcock, you probably know of it, but he shows that a lot of things in the Vatican directly relate to the pineal gland. So, and even the ancient Egypt knew all about this gland, but we're so. Yeah, oblivious to it. We hardly know anything. So in our case, this gland is very small, and it's like a pea now. And I think what with normal use, it would be like a small ball, like a ping pong ball from table tennis. So it can be much bigger than it is now if we know how to stimulate it and let it function in a normal way. And of course, when it's much bigger, then our inner world is also much bigger than our outer world. At this moment, hardly anyone understands that there's an inner world, but everybody is so focused on the outside world and running and getting stressed and thinking that it's all about that. But that's not it. That outer world that disappears the moment we die, and then we are only then we see that we only have the inner world. So I think it's better that we realize that before we die and already stimulate it, and the shock is less dramatic.
Walter Russell had a very interesting way that he connected, shall we say, with the source for much of this knowledge. And as you said before, you've been reading quite a bit and everything as well. But you also said you did have some, I guess, moments of intense connection to the source. Can we put it that way?
Yeah, I when I woke up on July the 15th, I had an own festival in the Netherlands, and it was celebrating the end of the Mayan calendar, according to my interpretation. And it was really nice, the July 14th and the feast we were having, the festival. And when I woke up on the 15th and I got out of my tent, because it was a camping thing, I felt a very deep inner peace. Everything was in balance, and there was no need to do anything. Everything was already okay. And that is for me very different than my normal awakening, because I have all kinds of things I need to do, and very eager to bring things into reality. And then I was really calm. Walter Russell calls it the stillness, and he refers to the universal stillness, which is everywhere. And yeah, I experienced that kind of stillness. So I think I was connecting with my own inner core at that moment. And that was a very beautiful experience. But I don't have any contact with divine creatures or channeling or whatever.
Sure.
Some people have that too. But all I write down is based on my own understanding and my own feeling with that. So it has to feel good to me. But mostly it has to make sense to me, and I have to fully understand it. Otherwise, I will not pass it on to other people.
You know, in the last few minutes here, in the first hour that we have together, let's talk more about your website. I want you to give out the URLs to the different ones you have out there. And also, of course, tell us some of the material that people can find there. The ebooks, of course, you have. I mean, I think you're the author of, what, like 25 books all in all?
Yeah, I've written a lot of books, but there are only 4 books available in English. The other ones are in Dutch. If you go to pateo.nl, P-A-T-E-O, and pateo is Latin word, means no longer hidden. When you go to that website and you click on English, because there are also other languages you can choose from, in total 9, but most is in Dutch and in English and a little bit in French and German. But you can even click on Chinese if you want. But if you click on English, then, for instance, you find on the homepage a lot of videos. And if that's not enough for you, then you can also click on the left side. There's also the word videos, and there are even more. And if you like to read from a screen, or you print it yourself, you can find the 4 ebooks I wrote. And they're available as online PDFs, so you don't have to pay for it. That's what you find on pateo.nl. And I'm also related to the School of the Holy Science. And that the website is schoolofthe.holyscience.org. And now you write holy with H-O-L-Y. And then you find me as one of the teachers of the Holy Science. And that's also a very interesting website, because we give once in a while a webinar. For instance, on December the 3rd, I'm not sure when this will be broadcasted, but on December the 3rd, I will give another webinar, and that will take 2 hours, and then I will show PowerPoint slides. So I show figures, and you hear my audio next to it, and then I'll take you along all the slides and show you the basics of holy science to me. So I think those 2 websites are important, pateo.nl and the School of the Holy Science.org.
Very good. And it will be available on our website before that as well. So you guys want to go and check that out on December 3rd. Go ahead and do so at School of the Holy Science.org. We're going to have these links up, of course, on redicecreations.com. And we have much more to talk about, Johan. So do stay with us. We'll take a short break here, but we'll be right back with more.
Shame.
Stay with us in the second hour as we discuss how technology is viewed within holy science. We will talk more about the body's feedback system and the importance of caring for our body temple. Johan will talk about the cons of quantum physics and the wave-particle duality, which he says is part of the shadow. We end on an interesting discovery that he made at the Giza Plateau called the Giza Clock. You can subscribe at redicemembers.com to continue to listen, and with a membership you will get full access to all our programs, and you also support independent radio that spares you from commercial interruptions. Next on Red Ice Radio, Eric Karlstrom on Superstorm Sandy and weather manipulation. Then G. Edward Griffin on the collectivist conspiracy. We also have David Talbot, and later on our 2012 special is coming up after that. But right now we'll proceed with Johan Oldenkamp in Hour 2.